Noon AM 950, Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Doug Padgett in 4 o'clock, hour 4 to 5. I kind of refer to this as drive time. Somebody said to me the other day, well, it must be people that get off work awfully early. They're driving at 4. Like bankers drive time. Hey Brett, I thought about you this afternoon, you know, not only because we work together here, but I was thinking about you because I'm guessing you might be a cable guy. In the same way that I am, like cables and cords. I don't mean you buy your television through cable. I hope you're picking it up on the freebie.
Yeah, I was saying I don't do the I don't have a cable box. I'm all through the antennas now and the internet.
Yeah, are you using somebody else's login so you can watch free HBO though? Like, are you
not? Not quite that. Nope. I'm pretty much Netflix. That's all I need.
yeah, there you go. Well, I own an extraordinary number of cables, like cords.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I do too. Yep.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a certain kind of person that likes cords and cables, and I have tried to purge myself of my overabundance of cables in my life on a number of occasions, but I'm back to having, you know, just far too many. It's a real issue. But and then there's that one cable that you need, this one the one special cable that's always supposed to be right with that in that one, you know, that one ziplocked little container. And man, it goes to this little microphone I have, and I have been looking all day long for this thing. I thought it was going to be remote today from the airport, so I really needed to have this little microphone. It turns out I didn't have to go to the airport, and it was a good thing because I couldn't find this cable. And I'll tell you, there's just nothing that can make a person like me go more sort of batty all day long than having to listen to Donald Trump's nonsense and not be able to find my cable to my microphone. So I'm on the hunt, and I thought you'd appreciate that dilemma.
I know what you mean. Yeah. It's, what kind of cable was it, by the way?
Well, yeah, good question. So it's a special one. It's for this little Apogee microphone.
Oh, okay.
And, so it's USB on one side and then connects to the microphone on the other side with this kind of I've never seen a cable like it. And I don't know why they use such a quirky setup on this microphone. But I've never seen it for anything else. And I've always been nervous about losing the thing. And somehow I have managed to misplace, you know, and I've got dozens of like USB-Cs and Apple cords, and you know, I've got piles of that stuff. It's a toxic waste dump of cables sitting around in eyesight of where I am right now. And of course, the one that I need, can't find it. My wife says, well, that's because you have too many cables. And I say, my problem is I'm short a cable right now, not that I have too many. So on the dilemma goes. Hey, we're going to be talking to a couple of guests today. One of them is a council person from the Richfield City Council. Council person Troutman is going to be with us about this article that came out in the Star Tribune today. If you if you go to thestartribune.com, you'll see this article in the West Metro section about the conditions at a Richfield apartment apartment building, a big one. That a developer has taken over, a nonprofit developer, and yet it's still overwhelmed by the amount of updates that have to be done in this project. And I happen to know Councilperson Troutman, and I thought, hey, this would be a good chance to talk to some local governor or to some local government representatives about what they do, how they do it, how they engage in this. So you can find that article on Star Tribune, or it's linked on the Facebook page for AM 950, or if you follow me on Facebook, Doug Padgett, I have it linked there as well. Hello, Councilperson Troutman.
Hey, Doug. Hey, guys. How you doing?
All right. Well, hey, tell us a little bit about Richfield. You and I have chatted about this before. That Richfield is a real up and comer in recent days, these recent years, as a real housing boom, and that has created some level of problem over there in Richfield that the good people in city government are trying to do something about.
Absolutely, and thanks for having me on. It's always great to talk with you, Doug. And yeah, Richfield is going through, I think you could call it a renaissance or revival. For 2 years running, we've been the Star Tribune's number one housing market. Of course, just looking at our, you know, at the sometimes the Star Tribune says good things about it. I mean, they're good. They're both really good articles, well written. But talking about the increase in wealth and prosperity that's happened after the housing bust, you are consistently highest value, highest return on your dollar, the quickest, most likely sold quickest. Schools are improving by a lot of metrics. Richfield's really interesting. I did some rough math on the back of a napkin here, just averaging, assuming that most homes in our community have increased in value probably about $100,000, $130,000. That means in our little suburb, we've aggregately, homeowners have increased their wealth by over $1 billion in the last decade. So significant wins there. At the same time,
and that's even before Donald Trump made America so much greater, right? That's even before all the goodness that has come from
that. You know, the numbers were fake then; they're real now. However you want to count that, you know, there's just things. Good things are happening in
Richfield.
In the midst of in the midst of that, we have an affordable housing crisis. So with rental and homes. So where a decade ago you could buy a home for $100,000, that was a three-bedroom home. Now that home's $250,000, $300,000. And so when there are sales of large multi-unit family dwellings, then if that price doubles, just to be a competitive owner, not increasing your profits, you now have a mortgage that's twice as expensive. Yeah. So people's income hasn't doubled in that period. So how do you come to address that? How do you if people's incomes aren't rising, but the cost of their home has doubled? You know, how do we
so how do you as a councilman, how do you think about that with the city council? Because I know that, you know, city councils, you don't feel that your job is to start noodling around in rental subsidies for everyone. What is it that a city can do? And then we'll get into the particular issues about, you know, this particular.
Sure. I'd say a couple things. The one thing you talked, when we talked about what the city can do, one part of that is the council. Another part of that is the school board. There are a lot of churches and places of worship and nonprofit organizations and other organizations that do a lot of good work. So I'd say, first of all, it's not one of us. But one thing that we can do, and you know, we were pleased that Aon expressed an interest in purchasing these properties in a way that wouldn't just immediately. We've had other developments where everybody's been evicted en masse, and even though we saw some prosperous development take place there, we displaced entire communities, and I think there was a settlement, a pretty significant settlement, that said that this was in fact unlawful the way they did that. So so Aon here in this instance came in, and you know, it's slow progress. Just because something's better doesn't mean it's good, and doesn't mean it's okay. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean it's acceptable. So while they've curbed the rent increases and the doubling in rents, there's still some pretty profound problems. And what Aon's wrestling with and the community's wrestling with and what tenants are rightly upset about is the pace of that change in development. And so when
here's how
$50 a month instead of $300 a month, you know, $50 a month, if you're on limited means, is still painful, but that may not be enough to bring about all the changes that need to happen.
So the way the article says it is that this is a 422-unit complex, which is huge,
right.
And that's probably something that people who are making apartment complexes now want to sort of drift away from, because the amount of liability that an owner would have is enormous. So I'm imagining that zoning and other decisions that a city can make going forward might think differently about these sized units. But in this particular one, in this article, the one that was sold a year ago, and that, I don't know,
yep.
I guess there's 400 family units living inside this thing, that tenants complain of mice and cockroach infestations, flooding in lower level units, mold and deteriorating walls and carpet, and health inspectors have made 25 checks at the complex so far just this year. And that Aon has the nonprofit organization that has purchased it has renovated 42 of the 422 units. So I guess one of the questions I have, and I think a lot of people might have this when they read this article, is: was there anything a city can do or should do to keep a big property like this from falling into this level of deterioration if it's so large and is plays such an important role for affordable housing? It just seems unreasonable to let owners own and manage a building and let it fall into a mice and cockroach infested, flooded and deteriorating walls and carpet situation.
No, I said, well, you mentioned one of those in the questions, which are health inspections. So part of what we do with all landlords, not just Aon, is when properties fall below quality standards, we can either fine or hold their license at bay if the problems persist. So I'm not sure exactly where we're at in all those processes, but those are some of the tools that the city has to
I know this question will put you on the spot as a council person, but do you feel like the expectations and the limits of what it takes for the health inspectors or for other building inspectors to come in are reasonable? Does this particular story indicate that maybe something needs to be done so that inspections are triggered at an earlier stage in this kind of deterioration?
You're right. It puts me on the spot a little bit, but I'd say in general, yeah, I think it does. I think figuring out how we got here is one thing, and then figuring out how do we prevent other properties from getting place, and is another question. And then with this particular unit, saying, well, what's the trajectory, right? So 10 units is good for those, or not? Excuse me, 10% of the units. That's helpful, but that's not transformative fast enough. So yeah. Figuring out what we need to do certainly is where we're at. Not just as a city.
Councilman Troutman, can you hang on while we go into
the community are trying to figure that out.
Can you hang on and we talk about this after the commercial break?
Sure, you bet.
Great. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Doug Padge will be back here after the break.
The number one source of the Twin Cities gay scene is All Digital. Follow Twin Cities Gay Scene on Facebook and Twitter. Sign up for the Scene Shot email blast for weekly updates and chances to win great prizes. No app is needed to view the bi-weekly web editions of Scene. It's GLBTQ media for the mobile generation. Find it all at TwinCitiesGayScene.com. That's TwinCitiesGayScene.com.
This is Chad, owner of AM950, here to tell you about Snap Construction. They're experts in roofing, siding, window, and insurance restoration. They have energy-efficient products available for both residential and commercial properties. This spring, when we needed a company to take a look at a problem with our roof, I called the company I knew I could trust, Snap Construction. I've known Ryan, the owner at Snap Construction, for years, so I knew I could trust him. Don't just take my word for it. Check out their reviews online. They are arguably the most well-reviewed exterior contractor online in the metro area. Over the years, Ryan has always said the same thing to me about his work. If we build it, shouldn't we be held accountable for the work indefinitely? He backed that statement up years ago when Snap Construction was a pioneer in offering a lifetime craftsmanship guarantee on all their work. For a free estimate or general questions, call the locally owned company AM950 Trusts, Snap Construction, at 612-333-SNAP. That's 612-333-SNAP, or find them online at snapconstruction.com. They have financing options available.
This week, Connections Radio Show will be doing a Part 2 radio show at 10 a.m. We'll be featuring Fearless Comedy Production. This group encourages, empowers, and educates new artists and existing talents and explores the limits of comedy while striving to create a more diverse and inclusive environment. We'll be chatting about the upcoming Fringe Theater Festival and doing radio theater. Tune in this Saturday at 10 a.m. to hear Big Fun Radio Fun Time here on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota.
The only thing better than being outdoors soaking up that summer sunshine is coming into a nice, cool, air-conditioned house afterwards. So if you're looking at updating or buying a new AC, Standard Heating and Air Conditioning has some great systems at $700 off during July. There's even easy financing options available on approved credit. It's no sweat. Really, no sweat. Call today and ask how you can save $700 on your new air conditioner. Learn more at standardheatingdeals.com. Some restrictions apply.
Hello, humans. This is me, Ellie Krug, with Ellie 2.0 on Monday mornings from 7 to 8 a.m. This Monday, our theme is political idealism. I'll have a special guest, Richard Painter, who's running for the U.S. Senate, and I'll ask about what makes him tick and how idealism got him into the senatorial race. Tune in for this and my usual segments, all about practical idealism. I've got a vision of a better world where everyone has a place at the table. Ellie 2.0 on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
35, you got a boy.
AM 950, progressive voice of Minnesota. Doug Padgett back, talking to Councilman Troutman from Richfield. There's an article in the Star Tribune today that raises the issue about affordable housing and how a city is interacting with a new owner and landlord of a big apartment, a series of apartment complexes, apartment buildings in Richfield. So, Simon, thanks for being on and for talking about this.
Absolutely.
Say a bit about what Richfield is doing to create a context where more affordable housing can come online. Because to a lot of landlords, to a lot of owners, to a lot of business people, when they hear affordable housing, they just think cheap and run down and the kinds of conditions like are told about the Seasons Park from Crossroads,
right.
Crossroads and area. What all are you doing? And what's the positive news currently happening in affordable housing options in the country or in the city?
Sure. I can talk a little bit about what we're doing, but none of this happens in a vacuum. Every council mm-hmm. member I've talked to in the Twin Cities, from Minneapolis to other suburbs to when we go to National League of City issues, everybody, because of the increase in value in homes across the country, that affordable housing is vanishing everywhere. So fixing a problem in Richfield, we can do our little bit, but it's a team lift. It's a community lift. But some of the things that we're doing, we have policies we're hoping to pass by the end of the year. They're called inclusionary housing policies. That's where the city's involved with housing. There's going to be a minimum requirement to include new affordable housing. So this is quality affordable housing. These are new constructions that provide families affordable housing that's already at a level that that's dignified, that's quality, that's sustainable for families. Another ordinance that we're looking at is similar to something that St. Louis Park has done in the last year, which is in circumstances where there are these mass transfers of, you sell multiple or an apartment complex that has several hundred units, mm-hmm. that apartment owners have lead time. So they have at least 90 days notice, or they get relocation assistance if tenants are moved. So right now, in circumstances where there's a new owner, tenants could get as little as 30 days notice and have to find new affordable housing. And so that's which if you're a college student, that might not disruptive, but if you've lived right. somewhere for 20 years and your social network's there and all your whole life is one place. I know our family recently transitioned an older my mother, and going through her house after 30 years of living in that house, that was months of work. So to be able to have to turn on a dime, those are some of the things that we're doing. We're also creating a down payment assistance program for residents that have been in Richfield, renting in Richfield, and buy a home in Richfield. We want to make that possible. And so in that $1 billion increase of value, we want not just homeowners to benefit from that, but renters that want to invest in our community and stay invested in our community on a homeownership side, we're making paths for them to be able to do that too.
Well, thanks for all that work, because it really does matter at the city level. And, there's still a story in this country, and especially in places like Minnesota and a lot of our suburban and urban areas, that home ownership is the thing that is most preferenced by our policies and by sort of our imagination, and that renting is seen as some sort of a transitional stage, right? That you want people to get out of. You want people to be owners, not renters, this kind of thing. And I grew up in an apartment complex, so I was I was a renter kid my whole life. And there's a lot of people who live their lives like that, and there's a bit of a stigma about that. In some urban environments, that's not the case, right? You might live in New York or in San Francisco or something. A lot of people rent, and there's a whole rental culture. But that's not the case here. Is there anything that the city's doing to sort of make the rental experience more positive, more more normative, more, you know what I'm getting at? More sort of like you should and could be proud of that lived expression of reality, and not, well, someday you're going to get out of rental housing, I hope, kind of attitude.
I think that's a great question. I think part of what we're doing is creating a more stable environment for renters, and that's a key component. Knowing that when you're there, you're not just 4 weeks away from not being there.
Yeah,
I think is pretty critical. And creating new affordable housing that's not exclusively affordable housing, but that's mixed use and mixed. You have a market rate and workforce housing in with affordable housing. And recognizing a diverse community that's diverse, not just in one segment, in one apartment development, but really throughout the city, which is what in the midst of all this development has been happening in Richfield anyways. We're becoming a much more diverse city, even as property values are going up, even as, you know, we have this transition between younger and older residents.
Okay, can you say something about how people in your situation refer to affordable housing? Is that a number? Is that a calculation? What is affordable housing?
It
kind of comes down to it. Like how much is it?
And the exact number is escaping me, but I think, you know, it's being able to afford. And we can put it in the, if your show has a link.
Being able to afford housing.
That's
affordable housing.
it's a mathematical formula that says you use so much of your income.
Okay.
To be able to afford your house. So if you have less than 60% of.
All right. Well, like in rough numbers, what is that
medium income?
Is that...
Then if you can afford that, then it's affordable. If you have to use 60, 70, 80% of your income to pay for your home, that's not affordable.
Sure. So when people are sitting around thinking about affordable housing, they can't be asking every single person how much do they earn. Is that based on something like
is that
$800 a month apartment or $1,000 a month? Like in Richfield, what does that number land at? If you said there were apartments for rent, is it at $1,000 or below would be considered affordable? Do you know? Is there some number like that
that's a great question, Doug. You're putting me on the spot a little bit because I wouldn't want to say the wrong number and get it wrong.
Gotcha.
And of course, it depends on the number of people in your family.
Well, I would just say, I mean, I know you're doing good work on this. You think a lot about it. People in Richfield are trying to think about it. I think something like that can be helpful for people. And I know there's a more technical answer to that question because it has to do with how much a family earns. But boy, if people would just know, because if you haven't looked for an apartment recently, you might not have any idea how expensive apartments can be to rent. And I think putting those numbers out in people's minds.
A one-bedroom apartment can go for $1,300 a month. Easily.
Really, $1,300
in Richfield. If you happen to buy a home, you know, in the last 10 years, you're very likely paying a mortgage that's lower than that single bedroom apartment. And
yeah,
so,
see, there's something not right.
So again, just imagine for every homeowner, you just sold your home and somebody bought it, and now they rented out that home, and that person who just bought it, all that equity that you got is now translating into a higher rent that somebody else would pay. And that's true for single family homes and for multi-unit complexes.
Yeah, thank you. That's Simon Troutman. He's a council person over there in Richfield. They're figuring this out. They got a little attention in both the local paper and the Star Tribune about this. Councilman Troutman, thanks for being on the show. Appreciate it, friend.
Hey, thanks, sir. Good to talk to you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, hey, thanks. Hey, stick with us, folks. We'll be back here after the break on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota.
What kind of a jackass would let an animal pick their insurance? Did you really think a lizard could save you money on car insurance? Would you let a duck pick your health policy? Insurance can be a zoo, but this is ridiculous. What you really need is an insurance agent that isn't looking out for the insurance companies. You need Cheryl at Array, an independent agent with 30 years' experience looking for the best rate possible. Quit monkeying around and call 763-504-3667. That's 763-504-3067 for Cheryl at Array, representing you, not the insurance companies.
I'm Richard Painter, and I'm running in the DFL primary for the U.S. Senate. I believe we're at a critical juncture in our nation's history. Our democracy is under siege by the Trump administration. Foreign influence is unchecked as politicians exploit power for private gain rather than the public good. But what is happening right now is a symptom of a larger disease. The corruptive influence of money and politics makes government unresponsive to the people. For 25 years, I have been speaking out against corruption on Wall Street and in Washington. Now I want to fight for you in the United States Senate. I will fight foreign-owned mining companies seeking to pollute our waterways. I will fight against money and politics and corruption on all levels of government. I will fight to initiate investigations and hearings for the treasonous behavior of President Trump. It's time to impeach. Please support me in the DFL primary on August 14. See all the issues at PainterMinnesota.com. I'm Richard Painter, and I approve this message.
Ad prepared and paid for by Painter Minnesota.
This summer, you have lots of choices when it comes to your carpet and air duct cleaning, so make it a smart one with Zero Res. Only Zero Res cleans with patent-empowered water, so you know you get healthy, clean carpet that's safe for your family. It's like remodeling, but without the price tag. So schedule your carpet cleaning today and get the Zero Res Summer 3-Room Special. And this month, save $50 when you get your air duct Zero Res clean. Call 952-ZERO-RES or visit ZeroResMN.com. Zero Res, spell it backwards or forward, it spells the same.
Is it time to downsize, but don't know where to start? Give the House Geeks with Bricks Real Estate a call. We're experienced in making this process as easy as possible. Whether it is help with pricing your home, assistance in finding movers, or any of the other professionals you might need to get your home sold, we're here for you. Take the worry away by giving us a call today at 612-207-5388. That's 612-207-5388 or online anytime at housegeeks.com.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Brett Johnson. Look for partly cloudy skies tonight with a low around 58. Thursday partly sunny with a high near 69. Friday sunny with a high around 76. And Saturday sunny with a high around 78. Cafe Latte is the Eat Local Minnesota restaurant of the week. They're a gourmet cafeteria with an ever-changing selection of award-winning salad sandwiches and soups, plus they have no artificial colors, flavors, or preservatives. Cafe Latte is located on Victoria and Grand in St. Paul. Details at eatlocalminnesota.com.
Hey, good afternoon. Welcome back to Doug Padgett, AM 950, Progressive Voice of Minnesota. I'm chatting here with Sean Fremstead, and Sean writes for the Center for American Progress. Hi, Sean. Thanks for being on the show today.
Hi there, Doug. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. Thanks for your work on this. Sean and it looks like a team of people over at the Center for American Progress put together a really important article with the headline, Trump's Immigration Plan Imposes a Radical New Income and Health Test. Sean, give us a recap on this. I read the article, and I got to tell you, it's long and it's detailed and really helpful. And I had no idea that, first of all, the president had the ability to change the criterion, and that the criterion is just so squishy in its interpretation of what somebody who's seeking immigration to the United States is about.
Yeah, so this is – it's kind of a sleeper issue. It's it hasn't gotten a lot of attention yet, but there's been – like. The only reason we have a draft of what the president is getting ready to propose is because the Washington Post was able to obtain a copy that was leaked. And the bottom line here is that, you know, the president has lost repeatedly on attempts to radically change the legal immigration system. So let's not even talk about, you know, undocumented immigrants. He really wants to get restrictive on our current legal immigration system, you know, the way you legally get green cards and the like. And he wants to do this. He, you know, they had legislation in Congress. That didn't go anywhere. So now he's trying to do an end around by writing new regulations interpreting this very obscure provision in federal immigration law. And so the bottom line is we wrote in this paper is if this happens, if he's successfully able to do this, you would impose a really radical new income and health test on, particularly on people coming here and getting visas based on family relationships. So, you know, you marry, you want to bring your spouse over, you're a working class person. You know, it's going to be much harder under these rules and probably impossible in many cases if you don't have, you know, $70,000-$80,000 a year. If you're not, if you don't have, insurance through an employer that doesn't cost anything and your health isn't perfect. There's a whole bunch of kind of ways in this which would really turn around the legal immigration system.
Yeah, and I found it just fascinating because I had assumed, and I guess this has been most of the way the country has functioned, at least in the last 30 or 40 years for immigration, that you had to have a means of providing for yourself. And you had to have some kind of natural connections that made you part of the community. Those two things kind of felt like they were the normal requirements. Yep. Yep. And then you had to wait in line. But the new what you've pointed out in the article on this Trump test versus the longstanding test, which is kind of those two things and a few others, is basically if you are going to benefit from any of the support that citizens in the United States benefit from. If you want to take advantage of Pell Grants, if you want to take advantage of refundable tax credits, any of that moves you into the category of being someone who, in the language of all of this, makes you a part of the public charge, meaning that you're on the public dole.
Right, exactly. No, the old idea with this, and this public charge language that you mentioned, and that's you know, it's not language you use today, but it was language they used in the 1800s. They put this language in way back 1882, and it was really an attempt to keep Irish immigrants out at the time. The idea was they were worried about immigrants coming over and then ending up in what at that point were called poor houses or almshouses, and so you were completely a ward of the state, and this was used – often it was used to discriminate, you know, it was the same problem back then. It was often used to discriminate and people were just judged, you know, by the, you know, whether it was the color of their skin or just how they looked as people who weren't going to be able to make it in the United States. But what he's really done is radically expanded this idea of being a ward of the state. So, yeah, if you're somebody who would get a Pell Grant or the EITC, you're now considered you know, a ward of the state. And I think the really radical thing we have here is that, you know, historically, it's really what it's been at its core. Historically, what this rule has been is if you're unable to work, if you don't have any family here, this is, you know, this would be a problem for you passing this public charge test. But as long as there's somebody who's able to work and you have family here and other things, we're not going to keep you out on that basis. He's really saying, I don't care about, you know, how many hours you can work, how healthy you are. It's just, you know, if you're not going to earn $60,000, $70,000, $80,000, we don't want you here.
And that's what was shocking.
Kind of thinking, you know, would you say that to a working class person earning $30,000 or $40,000 here? And that's effectively what this is.
Yeah, and that's what was shocking in the article. The way you broke it out was to realize that sense of not being a public, being on the public dole. Somebody could be earning $40,000 or $50,000, and according to these standards, if you're an immigrant, the Trump administration would say you're still trying to be some kind of a freeloader. Do you think? Exactly. And I know in your role as a senior fellow, you know, at Center for American Progress, and you specialize in economics and security and family policy and poverty. Do you think this is a means by which the Trump crowd is trying to put into law a new bias against people using public services so they can start to advance that same discriminatory attitude toward naturally born American citizens and not just immigrants seeking citizenship?
Oh, absolutely. It is part of a whole, you know, part of this is very much about immigration and very much, I think, about targeting, you know, to be impolite, the people from shithole countries that the president had referred to them. And so there's that sort of bias involved here. But I do see it as part of a larger agenda that says, you know, even if you're white, working class, been here for generations, we've got a problem with you, buddy, if, you know, your family gets the EITC or if your family gets a premium tax credit or the, you know, the Pell Grant. I mean, it's really – and it goes it's very much in line with what the administration is proposing in other areas, you know, say opposing, say, trying to really undermine the ACA by saying we want to make everybody have to have a social worker and a caseworker and have a plan and, you know, how many hours a week they're going to work every week in order to get Medicaid or, you know, in order to get you know, other sort of just basic kind of benefits. And, you know, we're not talking here about supporting people on generous cash welfare to meet all their living expenses. We're really talking about these sort of, you know, very minimal things like healthcare, kind of work support type things that millions of workers in the United States get because they're not getting them through their employer. They're not getting them through a living wage job, even though they're working 30, 40 hours a week.
Yeah, and boy, and there's a sense for me, I mean, I've kind of lost my mind in this Trump administration. I think about things happening in this country that I've never dreamed possible. But you could hear people making an argument that, and you heard this a little bit out of other Republican candidates in the past. You know, you sort of heard Mitt Romney say things about, you know, the percentage of the population that's, they're just kind of freeloaders and the takers. Yeah. They're not really contributing to the country. Their sense of patriotism is shown in their lack of financial contribution. And boy, you hear Trump use reciprocity and all this business.
Yeah.
And I mean, if it wasn't for the fact that he and so many of his billionaire cabinet members have been just freeloading on this country and robber baroning, reaping, you'd be a little concerned that what they're actually doing is trying to create a whole mindset in which anybody who benefits from that which this country has been proud and glad to lend as a helping hand and a safety net to people in need will now get spun with, well, you're not actually a true American if you're needing to take this kind of help, because that's what they're saying about people who are immigrating into the United States and want to become citizens is, if you're going to use the public services and the public contributions to help you make it in this country, then you're not really worthy of being a citizen. And you could see, I could see how that argument would be spun on people who already claim their citizenship.
Oh, yeah. I think it's absolutely right. And I think, you know, many of the things and part of the big thing it misses, of course, is, you know, we are not, I love the United States of America. We're a great country, but we are not a country with a expansive sort of set of, you know, an expansive welfare state that is, as generous. It's kind of striking, in fact, that the countries that Trump says he wants more immigrants from are often the most generous in terms of what they do for their people in terms of things like paid family leave and health care, free college and the like. But we are not, you know, we're very much kind of at the bottom in terms of kind of the generosity of our welfare state. So we're not a country where people are living, you know, month in, month out for years at a time on, cash welfare. That's not the kind of what we provide. Things are time limited. You have to often jump through a lot of hoops. There's very strict, often too strict income tests, and they have the counterproductive often because work more, you can be penalized. So I think what we have here is, the idea where we're really, and part of it I think it gets back to we've been, at one hand, a lot of what you've seen in the expansion of programs like Medicaid, like the ACA, like the EITC, what we were really doing there was trying to make work pay because we weren't willing to hold employers accountable. You know, we weren't willing to say, employers, you have to pay $15 an hour. Employers, you have to provide these benefits. So on one hand, and some of the idea, I think, behind that was we wanted more jobs, but, we were going to recognize that they weren't going to pay that great and there would be public subsidies. But now there's a kind of cutting that out from under people, I think, that is most troubling, where you can be working, making $7, $8, $9 an hour in a job like healthcare. It's not enough that we stigmatize you because you're a working class person in a poor paying job that maybe doesn't have a lot of status, but you're also now, according to the logic of this, getting some sort of horrible, welfare, because when you file your taxes, you get a rebate back through the earned income tax credit.
Yeah, and then that would disqualify you from being an immigrant in the United States.
Yeah.
It's amazing that Walmart will build into its financial model that many of its employees will utilize state and government and federal government services, and that's how they're going to get along. And so now these people coming in and seeking immigration in the United States couldn't even work at a place like Walmart without being disqualified from their immigration status, or they have to put, as you say in the article, some $10,000 bond down. And if they ever do use public services, it would be taken from. It's just madness. How possible do you think this is that they're going to pass that they're going to put these rules into place?
Well, I tell you, we're doing everything we can to slow this down, to keep it from happening. I hope there are people that come to their senses. I think, you know, they really, there are some people in the White House who really want this, and I see it as people who are nativists to the core, you know, it's not enough that we have a war on people who are here who are undocumented, a war on the Dreamers. It's really saying we want to, you know, expand that and open up a whole new front. I think right now I would say it's much more likely than not that we see this proposal come out. We don't know if it will be. We hope it won't be as bad as it was in this draft that we wrote about, but it could be as bad or worse. So I think we have to be prepared. One of the important things to know is this will. So what this is it gets published as a proposed regulation, and then it's something that the public can weigh in on through comments. So it's not the same as a piece of legislation in Congress where there's a vote. It's all within sort of the White House and the administration deciding how to weigh the comments. So I'm very worried, you know, especially without change in November, that something like this ends up sailing through the administration and looks very bad.
Well, Sean, thank you for your good work. That's Sean Fremstad from the Center for American Progress, and the article is Trump's Immigration Plan Imposes Radical New Income and Health Tests. Sean, thanks for your good work. Thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you very much.
Hey, and stay with us here. We'll be back after the break. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. I'm Doug Penn.
My sonny boy, be ready when they come, for they'll be returning sure.
Hi, everybody. Make plans to attend the one and only Powderhorn Art Fair on Saturday and Sunday, August 4th and 5th, in the heart of South Minneapolis and picture-perfect Powderhorn Park. Experience and purchase original artwork from more than 230 artists. Spend time with your family and friends creating your own work of art at over a half a dozen art stations. And don't forget to grab a bite to eat from over 25 different food trucks. So join us on Saturday, August 4th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. or Sunday, August 5th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. or both. The Powderhorn Art Fair is proudly brought to you by Powderhorn Park Neighborhood Association in collaboration with the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board, with a generous gift from the Metropolitan Regional Art Council. Again, join us for over 230 artists, 25 food trucks, and 6 arts experiences on August 4th and 5th. So we'll see you there at one of the most local art fairs around.
I'm Steve Conklin.
And I'm Jake DeRoff.
We're the hosts of the Mortgage Talk Show, Sundays at 12:30.
Steve, what are we going to talk about this week?
This week, we discuss why 70% of millennials regret buying a home, why mortgage rates are so high, and what is a jumbo loan and why do a jumbo loan.
Check us out for more information. Email us any questions at mortgagetalkshow.com.
Tune in to the Mortgage Talk Show every Sunday at 12:30 on AM 950.
Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces is having its annual store-wide sale. For the entire month of July, all of our indoor and outdoor fireplace products and accessories are at their lowest price of the year. At Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, we display, explain, and install the Twin Cities' most diverse selection of indoor and outdoor stoves and fireplaces, including metal and masonry pizza ovens.
I love my wood stove. We enjoy the sense of well-being we get by cutting and splitting wood to warm our home. Wood is our choice, but you may have other choices at Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces. Whether transforming an existing fireplace or adding something new, a clean burning wood, gas, or electric fire can have you sitting pretty and cozy by the fire. Visit Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces today and find the right fire for you.
Come see us. We have over 35 working displays in our store, which is just off I-94 at the corner of Riverside and East Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis. Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, since 1977, out of the ordinary products and services to make fire work for you.
Summer is the season to clean. For roof, siding, garage floors, decks, and more, Blue Sky Services can help you out. Anything that can be power washed, Blue Skies can safely soft wash. A power washing alternative that doesn't damage your home. So don't wait until it's too late and you need to replace things. Call Blue Sky Services at 651-447-4484 and tell them that you're an AM 950 listener to save up to $100 in July only. That is 651-447-4484. Call now to save on July services.
Hey, welcome back. AM 950, Progressive Voice in Minnesota. Like Badgett in 4 to 5 o'clock. Hey, Brett, those are some intense conversations with people, you know, trying to do something in the world. And you know who else has been in some intense conversations? Michael Cohen, Donald Trump's lawyer. That guy. Oh.
You wonder if the news cycle would be, how much different would it be if Donald Trump had not won?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, what would we be talking about?
We'd be sitting here thinking, what can we talk about today?
I mean, we'd be picking apart the emails of Hillary Clinton. Oh, the emails. I guess that's all we'd have to talk about. But how about Trump writing on Twitter today? What kind of a lawyer records his client? Well, you know what, Don, if you didn't care for that kind of a lawyer, why was he your lawyer for 16 years? I mean, here's a joker who goes around saying things like, I'm going to hire the best people. I have only the best people want to be around me. And apparently his picker is so broken for picking a lawyer that he didn't realize for all those years that Michael Cohen was a guy who was recording him in their conversations. He didn't have the wherewithal. He didn't have the ability to negotiate and look into the guy's eyes and see what kind of person he is. That's all been his brand. This is the thing about Trump, which is just drives me out of my mind. And his supporters continue to stick with it. They say things like, oh, he's just such a great negotiator. He just makes the greatest things happen. He brings all this stuff to bear. He's a living disaster. The people he has picked for all the things in his life that turn on him, he basically says they're horrible people. Or I only had the person around for a little while, or the person really didn't do much for me, whether it's Carter Page or it's Paul Manafort, or now it's Michael Cohen, or it was his national security advisor, or it's Stephen Bannon. Like all these people, it's like a trail of tears of apparently the worst person you could ever pick to do a job. And Donald Trump at the same time is saying that like he is the great leader and the great manager, the great business person and the best picker, continues to say, I can't believe that Steve Bannon would say this to the newspaper. I can't believe that this author would come in here and then turn on me, that who gave right to. And now I can't believe my lawyer would write such a thing. It's just incredible. I like, what setting is Michael Cohen in where he has a recorder out that Donald Trump can't see that there's a recorder sitting there? I mean, I have, like you have, Brett, I have had to record a lot of things in my life. He's not stealthing around with some sort of secret recording device strapped to his chest, right?
Yeah, it's not an FBI thing, yeah, where you're wearing the wire under your chest or anything. Yeah.
Right. He's sitting there with his lawyer, who's probably got his phone on the table and his recording app turned on. Because I don't think Michael Cohen is some stealth guy who's concerned. Yeah. So Trump knows that stuff's being recorded. He has to have known it. And if he didn't know it, if he couldn't figure out that his own lawyer, that Michael Cohen, the guy that he trusts, is recording him for ill purposes, is this really the guy that you want negotiating with Kim Jong-un in private? Is it really the person you want sitting with Vladimir Putin in private? Is it somebody who can't figure out that his own lawyer is recording him? I mean, at what level, skipping all the stuff about, you know, that no one I know who even supports Trump wants a president that lies to the press on a daily basis and pays people to silence his sexual affairs for them. Nobody wants that. And setting all of that aside for about 14 more seconds, just the idea that Donald Trump doesn't know he's being recorded shows him to be some kind of a doofus, apparently, that because this recording that happened on that day, it's not like there was something so explosive that Michael Cohen said, I have to record this conversation on this day. This was just a business as usual endeavor. And so if Donald Trump didn't know that it was happening, well, he sure should have. What kind of self-awareness does someone have? And if he does know or did know that the recording was happening, and now he makes it sound like he was secretly taped, it's just another lie about all this stuff. So it's really, every single day, whether it was yesterday with Trump having to release a $12 billion crutch for the soybean farmers that his own policies have damaged. I heard a senator refer to it as breaking someone's legs and then acting like you're the hero for giving them crutches, that they didn't want to be on crutches in the first place. It's Trump's tariffs that create the problem. And then his solution is to give them some sort of a financial crutch that's going to solve a temporary problem, and they're going to lose all these customers ongoing. It's just a disaster all the way around. And I didn't hear what happened the last half an hour just before we started this this hour of the radio show here. Trump was standing out in the Rose Garden with the one of the negotiators from the European Union talking about trade tariffs and acting as if now he's the big savior. He puts tariffs on all these countries and then says, now we want to drop all the tariffs. Wouldn't that be great to not have any tariffs? Like, there were already things in place that limited the tariffs that the European Union would have with the United States. It's truly something, which is why I'm finding myself personally more and more supportive of Richard Painter. And hearing Richard Painter's ad during the show here, him saying it's time to impeach Trump, I just think couldn't be more true. It's time. He's shown himself to be incapable of being the president. He's shown himself as being so insecure, of so value-free, and then giving away and compromising the United States in both reputation and in tangible actions with Vladimir Putin and with Kim Jong-un, and who knows whom else he has entered into these kinds of this kind of nonsense. So, Brett, I don't know where you are in that. Do you find yourself in the it's time to impeach Trump camp? Do you want to hear that from your federally represented or elected representatives?
Yeah, it's about that time. You know, it's a pretty extreme thing to do. But I mean, he's done some pretty extreme things. I think you almost have to set some kind of standard. Otherwise, future presidents are going to think, well, look what Trump got away with, and he didn't get impeached. I wonder what I could do now.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it's a terrible thing to happen to the United States to impeach a president, but it has reached that level. Like, I don't say it lightly. I say it with enthusiasm, but not lightly. I think it's something that has to happen. I'd love to hear from all of our representatives to call out to you, Senator Klobuchar and Senator Smith. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. Come on the show and talk to us about how you think we should be.
By the way, we still have calls out with both of them, so hopefully they will be on.
Just waiting for a call back. I know you're busy. AM 950, Progressive Voice of Minnesota. I'm Doug Padgett. We'll talk with you tomorrow.